Hi, my name is Joel. I'm the CTO and co-founder of Threevox Labs and architect of Ceramic. Today, I'm going to give you an overview of how Ceramic can be used to open source data and why the future of the web is self-certifying. So, right, so if we look at the web today, we have a picture that looks somewhat like this. We have these big companies that ends up siloing a bunch of user data, and they end up using this data to gain as much profit as possible by extracting value from that data. And users don't really have much of a choice. They kind of like, it can't really move out of that silo because there's like a bunch of network effects going on. So this is not really ideal. How would a better situation look like? Well, maybe something more like this, where we have this solar punk city where users kind of have full sovereign control over their data. If they're in one community and using some certain types of applications and something happens, they don't like that application anymore, they can kind of take their data, go and plug in somewhere else, and it will kind of just work. And so how can we get there? Why are we not there already? Well, there's been some attempts, especially in the European Union, to kind of force data interoperability through regulation. So essentially, it works something like company A has a bunch of user data and information, and now they kind of have to expose that data through some API so that someone else can like extract, or you as a user can extract that data. And so you can imagine a situation like this where company A has an API, company B wants to leverage that data or to kind of migrate users. Then they could integrate that API. And that can kind of work, right? But then the company A actually has an incentive to not really keep API 1 up to date. And maybe at some point they're just, oh, we're just going to change the API because we feel like it. So then the integration breaks, and now company B ends up having to build a new integration. And so you can see this is kind of quite fragile. And also, like, users of company B's applications can't really kind of interact with the user of company A, users in company A. So you're still kind of ending up with like two different silos in this model. So instead, there's like an alternative that was has been called self-certifying data. So there was this really great article by Jay Graber called Web3 is Self-Certifying. And it explains how these different protocols in Web3 have kind of this self-certifying property. So blockchains is kind of like the easy example of this, where you have Bitcoin, just a bunch of transactions that are linked together and with a bunch of signatures, and then put into blocks. And so you get this sequential ordering of events, exactly which transaction happened, in which order, and you can verify this very rigidly. Ethereum, similarly, they have a little bit more sophisticated account model. But that's essentially blockchain, like one kind of global state history. Then you have like a bunch of different protocols like Git and IPFS and Secure Scuttlebutt, where you kind of have an hyper-local verification of data. So in Git, you have this hashed together history. So you can see like how the commits change over time. Sometimes you have signatures involved in Git, but mostly not. IPFS, you can kind of have an object store where you put an object, get a hash, you kind of know exactly if you sync the data, you can verify it's actually the data that you wanted. Secure Scuttlebutt, you have a linked list of objects, you have signatures, which means that you can kind of verify the integrity of like how that happened and in which order these events took place. And so where does actually Ceramic fall into this picture? Well, Ceramic lands somewhere in between blockchains and these hyper-local protocols and tries to leverage both of them to gain kind of some scalability benefits, but also leverage the properties of blockchains where you have this sense of global time. So let's look into how it works. Ceramic is essentially a protocol for these self-certifying data objects. So each individual object has its own kind of, you can think of it as a ledger that is independently verifiable. You have a bunch of events that takes place, and these events can be signed or they can be an anchor into blockchain. And me as a node, I can kind of look at these events and compute what the current state of the object is. Each object is kind of like location agnostic, which means that if I create an object in Ceramic, someone else also likes that object, they can store that on their Ceramic node. And if my node goes offline, then the object will still be available. And this has some cool implications for open data. And because we can create this like open graph of information where these data objects link to each other, and we kind of have, this kind of becomes like a shared database of the web. So this is actually something that has been attempted before called Semantic Web. And what they try to do is, so if you think about the web as it is today, it's a bunch of HTML web pages that's linked to each other, basically a bunch of front ends that links together. What the Semantic Web tried to do is actually link the databases together. So on the data layer, you have links between different objects. The problem, I think, with that approach at that point in time was that they were using HTTP to link the databases together. So if I had an application that relied on some other company's data and database to kind of maintain like what state of my data was, if that other company disappeared and I linked to their servers, then my data would be totally screwed. So I couldn't really use that like anymore. And so it became kind of like an existential threat to kind of use this model. But in Ceramic, we don't actually have this problem, because if I rely on some other data producer that creates objects and I want to link to those objects for my data, then I can just replicate their data on my Ceramic node. And if their node were to go offline, it doesn't really matter, because the lookup is location agnostic. And so with these properties, we can actually start creating a shared kind of data backend where we have a shared network effect. So different applications can start kind of contributing to the same backend and leverage each other's data. So if I build a new application, I don't need to start from scratch. I actually can just leverage the data that already exists in the network. So if we take like a little bit deeper look into how these objects work in Ceramic, it's essentially an event stream where each stream is a bunch of events that are linked together using hashlinks. So if we look at this particular event log in the middle, we have a genesis event. The genesis event contains the initial state of the object. And the hash of this genesis event actually creates the unique stream ID. So this stream ID never changes over time. It's always the same. Then next, we have an anchor event, which essentially is a proof that the hash of the previous event was included into a blockchain at some point in time. And so this can actually be made more efficient by actually batching a bunch of different events from different streams into one singular blockchain transactions using a Merkle tree. Then we have updates to this stream, which are encoded in signed events. And so the signed event includes some kind of patch, some kind of state change to the object, and includes a signature by the controller of the stream. So the controller is some kind of identifier. In Ceramic, we use DIDs, which is kind of like an agnostic way of representing an identifier and that supports key rotation. And then we can have multiple of these signature update events. Then periodically we anchor again and get a new timestamp. And that's essentially how a Ceramic stream works. So if I spin up a new Ceramic node and I want to know the state of some particular object, if I know its stream ID, I could ask my node would ask the rest of the network, what's the state of this, what's the latest update actually? What's the latest event of this stream? Other nodes would reply, and I would retrieve the log, verify the integrity of the log, and then compute, kind of reduce the state of the log by computing all of the events. And all of these kind of updates are shared over libTDP. And so the anchoring is nice into the blockchain because it provides a time when the certain things happen. So if you want to audit the log at some point, you can do that. In addition, it also allows us to do secure key rotation. So if you think about key rotation, basically you have first a public key A, and then you want to change to public key B. That's super simple to do in a smart contract blockchain like Ethereum, where you split a smart contract. Now, first it's owned by key A, then it's owned by key B, and Ethereum kind of guarantees that integrity if you make that kind of rotation. However, in these hyper-local protocols, you have a problem because if someone rotates from key A to key B, and there's also a rotation from key A to key C, you have no way of knowing which happened earliest in time. The only way you can know is like links back to the previous event. And so these kind of become like the same, and there's no way to like know which one is correct. So if someone steals your key, that's a problem because they could just go back in time and create a new key rotation event. Ceramic solves this using these anchor proofs or anchor events, where if we rotate the key A, we can look at the anchor event that happened after that key was rotated. And if that happened before rotation to key C, then we know that that's the valid one. In addition to this, we can also have a configurable state transition logic called stream types. And so stream types kind of allows you to define what the program is that updates every time an event comes in, how do we update the state? So we can kind of not only support kind of simple JSON data, but we could potentially support a bunch of other types of data objects. And so I briefly mentioned that identity on Ceramic uses DID. So DID is short for decentralized identifiers, and it's a W3C standard for basically going from a short identifier to a document. And so this document contains public key material. So it could be like a public key for verifying signatures or public encryption key. So you can encrypt some message to that identity. Right now, we support a few different DID methods. PKH DID is a simple DID method that basically converts all accounts on different blockchains to a DID method. And so we can actually use this to support a bunch of different blockchains like Ethereum, Polkadot, Filecoin, Solana, what have you. But if we want to build like a coherent data ecosystem across all of Web3, that's not really enough because we don't want to end up in a situation where data is siloed in, you know, the Ethereum ecosystem, there's another data silo in the Polkadot and then Solana ecosystem, and they all kind of end up competing. We actually want the data to be interoperable so that when I go to an application, it doesn't matter which blockchain it's using, I can always bring my own data with me. And so 3AD actually is a DID method that we created that solves this problem by essentially linking different DID methods together. So we can link these PKH DID methods together to one identity that the user kind of can use across all these ecosystems. And then there's like other interesting DID methods that might be useful in some use cases, like NFT did, where you can have an object in Ceramic where the current owner of the NFT is the one that's allowed to update the object. All right, so this is kind of like quite abstract. How can we actually use this to build applications? Well, we created a few kind of tools and frameworks to make it easier. And the first one is called data models. So data models is essentially a template for user data. And it allows you to store data in a user-centric way while having some kind of like way of thinking of the data as like it relates to your application. So this might be like a simple user profile with like a name and an image or something like that. And so an application might define, you know, a set of data models. So application A here has 4 data models, and application B has 3 data models. So we can see the intersection, they actually share 2 data models. So we can get interoperability even if we don't completely share each other's full kind of state of an application. So you might imagine like a user profile might be shared and like social connections might be shared, but application B might be a blog application, application A might be something else, but we can still have that interoperability. And in order to make kind of the usage of these data models easier, we've created an SDK called SelfID. And so SelfID is essentially, you can think of it as kind of a global decentralized user table, where each row in this table is a DID user, or like a pseudonymous identity. And each row in this table is a data model. So here in this example, the first data row is like a name, the first row, the second row is like a some other kind of metadata, and the third row contains some other kind of like encrypted data. And you can imagine this, these rows kind of expanding on infinitely to like whatever data models that your application needs. And we can see here that there's no kind of room for conflict, since each data model is actually stored itself in Ceramic and gets its own unique stream ID. And the column is based on that stream ID. And so you can see that the DIDs here might be like various types of DIDs. And so important to note here is that the row in this table, or a row in this table, is completely controlled by the user. So the user kind of can choose to change their name or change any other data or remove some data. It's completely up to the user, and the application can just go in and arbitrarily change things. And finally, these data models are quite powerful. They can define a name and description, so it makes it easier for developers to kind of find the data that they need. And in addition, they contain a data schema. So in Ceramic right now, these data models contain a JSON schema, and that JSON schema is actually enforced on the data that goes into the cell. So if you're building an application, you see that there's another application that has created a really nice data model, you want to use it, you can pull that into your application, and you can be sure that the data that you pull out of there will contain exactly that JSON data. So no more kind of like random API changes underneath that you're not prepared for. And I think once we have this as a foundation, we can start create kind of like a shared commons of human data, where our data is not locked into any particular company or platform anymore. And like once we start gathering like network effects here, that can actually become real, because if I build an application, onboard 10,000 users, someone else builds, sees my data model, uses that in their application, onboards another 100,000 users, then I will leverage that, because that now I have more users, and they will also be benefit from this. So we get kind of this shared network effects. And in addition, if someone tries to kind of create a model of operating on this data that extracts value from the user by creating some kind of social media algorithm that divides the attention of the user or like polarizes people, then people can stop using that application, because the network kind of has you have control over your data in the network, and the application is kind of like one front end, or like one application on top of this data. And you might go to some other application that uses some AI algorithm to actually that's actually aligned with your values and aligned with the values of your community and aligned with the values of the human community. So we can actually start using this kind of really advanced technology to benefit all of humanity rather than to polarize us. So I wanted to just talk about some upcoming changes in Ceramic. We have a new doc site that's on its way. It's going to make it a lot easier to kind of get up to speed with everything Ceramic. There recently was a new release of Go IPFS, which we're going to leverage in Ceramic, and it supports DAI COSE. So essentially, this is some standards work we've been doing to enable kind of storage of signed and encrypted data in IPFS, which is really essential for Ceramic. We're also working on object capabilities. So this is a really cool way to kind of do authentication in the Web3 context. So essentially what we can do is we can have a stream be owned by, say, an Ethereum address. We can use the new sign-in with Ethereum specification, and an application can generate a session key, then request a signature from the wallet saying, hey, this session key should get access to this stream controlled by your address. and this gets signed by the wallet. The message and the signature goes back, and it's kind of wrapped in this specification called Kakao, which is just a way of formatting this object capability. Now, when the session key tries to write to the stream that's owned by the Ethereum address, then as long as it has this capability, it can show that, hey, I'm actually allowed to write on behalf of this Ethereum address. And this can also generalize to like any other blockchain accounts. TipSync is a way of using the libp DHT to query what the latest updates of streams are in Ceramic, which will enable much better scalability and resilience of the network. We are making some updates to the Glaze CLI, which will kind of become the most comprehensive way to interact with Ceramic from your command line. So both Ceramic and data models. Right, lastly, I wanted to mention some research topics that we are looking into and looking forward to like learn more about. So stream privacy is, of course, really important. Right now in Ceramic, most data is public. You can, of course, store encrypted data in Ceramic, and it's kind of like easy to implement like encryption for content in the data streams. But one problem in kind of these self-certifying protocols is that if you want to encrypt the metadata of the event log, that's really tricky. If you also want to maintain the public verifiability of the system, if you implement encryption of that, well, you can do that, but then you have to kind of trust some third parties to host your data and not reveal that data to anyone. And ideally, we can come up with a way to do this in a fully kind of private way that's also publicly verifiable. We want to enable kind of better multi-writer support. CRDTs can be a good way of doing this. Then we want to look into recursive zero knowledge proofs. And the reason this is like interesting is because right now, if you want to sync an object in Ceramic, you have to verify all of the history. We could potentially use a recursive zero knowledge proof to prove that all of the signatures and all the events actually led up to the current state. And we can verify that with one proof if we introduce this recursive zero knowledge proof. Finally, we want to introduce a validator network that allows users to pay validators to keep track of their data. Right now, you kind of have to run your own Ceramic node to keep the data available in the network for the data objects that are pinned on that Ceramic node. For users, this is kind of like not really ideal. It's hard to run crypto nodes. But if we introduce an incentive and validators in the network, you could potentially allow users to pay validators to keep their data available in the network. All right, so thank you so much for listening to this. If you want to learn more about Ceramic, go to our developer documentation. You can check out an application called Self-ID, which is kind of like a basic profile application that uses Ceramic. And if you want to chat with us, you can go to our Discord at chat.ceramic.network. All right, that's all. Thank you.